This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. This election year, as dozens of lawsuits in dozens of states challenged and preserved Americans' access to the ballot, we started to think about a Michigander who fought as hard as anyone for those rights. Charlotte Lottie Wilson was an artist as well as an activist for suffrage and civil rights. She lived and worked in the early part of the 20th century, at a time when tension between black and white activists was up front in the movement. The Michigan History Center's Jillian Reese joins us now with her story. Hey, Jillian.
Hi, April.
Lottie Wilson was first and foremost an artist, right? I mean, she was the first black student to graduate from the Art Institute of Chicago. What can you tell us about her early life and her career?
Lottie was born in Niles, Michigan in 1854. Her family was just an average middle-class family. She was very involved in the local community, and her family was very well known in Niles. Her family emphasized formal education, and they wanted to give Lottie the opportunity to do whatever she wanted, and she wanted to be a working artist.
What was her medium?
She did almost anything. So she would teach art classes, she painted on porcelain and china, create sculptures for commissions. And then she also painted portraits. She did local portraits, portraits of Black Americans that were well-known nationally. She donated a number of paintings to important organizations for Black Americans like the Tuskegee Institute and Provident Hospital in Chicago.
Tell me a little bit more about how her interest in politics grew. It sounds as though her family was pretty involved in civic life in Niles, but how do you get from there to being on the front edge of the suffrage movement?
I think, you know, when you're a woman sort of trailblazing in a profession that was really closed off to women, there weren't very many women who made their living as an artist. She kept her maiden name her entire professional career. I think that you have a lot of chutzpah and you are really motivated, I think, to push forward in other areas. So, you know, in addition to being an artist, she wanted to be involved in her community. You know, she was a member of the National Association of Colored Women, which was a women's rights and suffrage organization that was created in part because of the segregation that Black women faced in suffrage organizations. She was a member of the National American Woman Suffrage Association. She was a member of the Afro-American Council, which is a precursor to organizations like the NAACP. And she was also involved in philanthropy. She was a trustee of the Phyllis Wheatley House in Detroit, which was a settlement house for African-Americans who were arriving in Detroit from the South during the Great Migration. And I think that shows sort of this network. She's in Niles working as an artist, but she's still involved in civil rights organizations in the city of Detroit.
So here was Lottie Wilson, really an amazing figure and such a trailblazer in so many ways. But at the same time, like, how would you describe the barriers that she would have experienced that excluded her from full citizenship at that time as a Black woman?
When Michigan achieved statehood, we had some of the most liberal voting laws in the United States, but Native Americans could not vote, Black people could not vote, women could not vote. After the Civil War, Native American men could vote and Black men could vote, but not women. But in addition to that, this was a woman who was moving around the state, was moving around the country, going to other places to talk about suffrage and civil rights, to work on art. And when she was moving around the United States, she would have met with a patchwork of laws that we call Jim Crow laws now, which were laws that were created after the end of the Reconstruction that were meant to limit the movement and the rights of Black Americans. There were many things outside of Michigan that she would have faced that would have reminded her of her second-class citizen status.
What would you say was the sort of touchstone for her when the movement would have really picked up steam?
In 1899, The National American Woman Suffrage Association held their annual convention in Grand Rapids. The National American Woman Suffrage Association was the number one national suffrage organization.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. This was a pretty storied moment, certainly in Michigan women's suffrage, but also nationally speaking, too.
Yes. And the National American Women Suffrage Association discouraged Black women from attending their conventions in an effort to appease white suffragists from Southern states who did not want an integrated convention. They did not want to have to mix and mingle with Black women at this convention. But the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs would still send members to this national convention despite the tensions, because they knew that this was the number one organization. They wanted to have representation, even though they knew they weren't welcomed there.
To think about that kind of open hostility to Black women is just really startling. I mean, can you set the scene for us? Is there anything that we know of, you know, what the tone of those meetings were like, given that there were, you know, there were Black women there who said, we're not going to stop organizing. And, you know, and we do insist on our place at the table here.
I want to be frank. I think Black people in the United States are very sadly familiar with this feeling of being ostracized, of being left on the table for political advancement. For the leaders of the woman suffrage movement, particularly, you know, women like Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Anna Howard Shaw, they saw the tabling of Black women or ostracizing Black women as a way to achieve their goals politically. While at the same time, you know, they also supported ideas of white supremacy. They also wrote about the fact that it was, you know, an abomination that Black men got the right to vote before white women. You know, there are telegrams, letters out there from these leaders to politicians in the South who used integration as a reason to not support women's suffrage, saying that when they were fighting for women's suffrage, they were not fighting for Black women to get the right to vote. They wanted to make that really clear so that these Southern politicians would end up supporting an amendment to the Constitution to give women the right to vote. They said, we won't interfere in what you want to do in the South. So Black women would have been very aware of this. And I think it shows a lot of the resiliency of Black women when it comes to political organizing. And this has been true from almost the entirety of the history of the United States, you know, seeing barriers put up, but then pushing forward and confronting those barriers in a very courageous way, which is what Lottie Wilson did.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is the Michigan History Center's Jillian Reese. We're talking about West Michigan artist and suffragette Lottie Wilson, who battled to get Black women the right to vote in Michigan. What came out of the convention?
These conventions, they happened annually, and throughout the convention, women would present resolutions on a range of women's issues. So this was a suffrage organization, but they were really a feminist organization. They would talk about suffrage. They had resolutions about equal pay, resolutions about divorce, domestic violence, temperance, education for women. On the second to last day, Lottie presented a resolution about segregation on rail cars. At the time, women and families who traveled by train would travel in so-called ladies' cars. And this was a place where smoking and drinking were prohibited. Oftentimes, the interiors of these cars were much more lush than the regular cars. But in many places in the United States, Black women could not buy tickets to these ladies' cars, no matter what their socioeconomic status was, no matter what their occupation was. They could not ride in these cars. Sometimes they would buy a ticket on the ladies' cars, like in the North. And then as they traveled through different jurisdictions with Jim Crow laws, they would be moved to a smoking car. And what that really said, and you know, this goes back to sort of Sojourner Truth's Am I a Woman speech, like the common thought of the time was that Black women weren't ladies, that Black women, because of their Blackness, could not achieve that genteel lady sort of feeling. And, you know, they had to be segregated. They were different than white women. And traveling by rail cars, which was the major way that people traveled during this time, to be told that you aren't a lady no matter what your social status is, no matter where you come from, what your family did, was something that was very offensive to a lot of Black women and was a major focus. This ladies' car and being able to ride in ladies' cars was a major focus of Black suffragists and feminists of the time. So Lottie's resolution stated that she resolved that colored women ought not to be compelled to ride in smoking cars and that suitable accommodations should be provided for them. That was it. That was the statement. And she wasn't even calling for integration. She was just saying, we want some accommodations, like make a ladies' car for Black women so we don't have to sit in the smoking cars. This was a national convention. There were a lot of Southern delegates there who attacked Lottie. They said this wasn't the goal of this convention, that, you know, they didn't want to speak about these issues. They were irrelevant. Remember, they were talking about a whole host of other issues, but this was a women's issue, the segregation, but it wasn't a white women's issue. They were really against her even bringing it up. There were some other delegates, like the daughter of the famous abolitionist, the Blackwells, Alice Stone Blackwell was there. And she came to Lottie's defense and sort of said, we should care about the rights of all women, not just white women. Susan B. Anthony, who is the chair of the meeting, she dismissed the resolution. She said this resolution was outside of the National American Woman Suffrage Association's influence, that they couldn't do anything about it, that this wasn't a women's issue. And she ended the debate before it got too heated. And this is kind of typical of those meetings. Black women would try to bring their concerns to the table, and then they were told by the leadership that that wasn't really a concern for this convention.
Mm-hmm. How did that set the tone for the course her activism took in later years?
Lottie really understood this double access of oppression that Black women faced, that they faced racism for being Black and sexism for being a woman, and sometimes classism depending on their socioeconomic class. I think she really focused her art. She wanted to meld her art with politics. She wanted to use her creativity to uplift the Black community and Black culture. One of her most famous paintings, and actually was the first painting to be accepted into the White House's collection that was by a Black artist, was a reinterpretation that she did of a painting of a meeting between Sojourner Truth and Abraham Lincoln. This meeting, actually, we don't know if it actually happened, which is a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. But the image shows Lincoln and Truth holding the so-called Black Bible that was given to Lincoln by Boston's Black community. And her choosing Sojourner Truth, this woman that was known and has become sort of the personification of this tension for Black women between their Blackness and their womanhood, that Sojourner Truth's famous "Aren't I a Woman" speech really talks about that tension that, you know, I'm treated and brutalized like a man, but I'm a woman and I'm not given the same sort of femininity that white women are given. And I think it's really interesting. Lottie ended up choosing Sojourner Truth as a subject, but then also that this was the painting that she has become most known for now.
Jillian, did Lottie Wilson sort of step back and rest on laurels after the 19th Amendment was passed?
No, she continued to work on behalf of civil rights organizations. You know, in Michigan, when the 19th Amendment passed, Black women were given the right to vote. But again, the support of Jim Crow and Jim Crow policies really affected millions of women. And after the 19th Amendment, there were millions of women in the United States that could not vote. There were laws against Latinas and Native Americans voting in the Southwest and the West Coast. And of course, in the South, there were laws passed to stop Black women to vote. And so Lottie Wilson still was involved in women's issues. She supported things like the Equal Rights Amendment, but she also was very involved with the NAACP, with, like I said, the National Association of Colored Women, these groups that were really focused on dismantling Jim Crow and advocating for the true installation of these voting laws.
Jillian, I know that the Michigan History Center has been also talking about Lottie Wilson because of an upcoming exhibition. Can you tell us when we should look for that?
Right now, we are closed due to, obviously, the COVID-19 closures in the state of Michigan. But we are, when we reopen, we are going to be opening a new temporary exhibit called I Voted. And we started this exhibit because we wanted to commemorate the passage of the 19th Amendment. We just celebrated the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. But we want to include the entirety of voting rights and voting history in Michigan so that we can sort of stretch out this story so it's not so focused on this narrative about the white leaders of the American suffrage movement, that we can include, the activism around getting Native Americans the right to vote, African Americans the right to vote, women the right to vote, expansion of voting in the 20th century and access to voting. So Lottie is a character in this story, and she's one of the many sort of ordinary people that we want to focus on to show how voting rights have moved and evolved in Michigan.
Jillian Reese is with the Michigan History Center. Jillian, thank you so much for sharing Lottie Wilson's story with us.
No problem. Thanks.